The 25th Gene Key. The transformational path of the 25th Gene Key goes from constriction to universal love, and it's the path of acceptance. There are certain gene keys which just occupy a central seat in the genetic code and in the story of our evolution, and the 25th gene key is one of these. It's a hub gene key, and you might even go so far as to say it's the hub gene key. And its theme is love. It's the very breath of love. And it's also obviously about the lack of love and the journey to rediscover and remember love. It's interesting when you look at a young child, particularly one in the first 3 years, because you don't really get a sense of the sacred wound at all. You know, and by the sacred wound, I mean the germ of suffering that every human being brings into the world with them. You know, the 25th shadow is the shadow of constriction and the dilemma of anxiety. But the young child just seems so unconstricted. They appear to have no anxiety. So, do we learn it? Where does it come from? How do we become anxious? We each carry anxiety, and you might be aware of it, or you might not be aware of it. But believe me, it's there. It's behind the facade. You sit down, you close your eyes, and stay still for a couple of hours. You'll soon touch the anxiety. Now, it doesn't have to manifest as worry, although it often does. Because anxiety is a vibration in the cells. It's the vibration of fear. It comes with mortality. It seems to be connected to our sense of mortality. And the young child doesn't really know what death is for themselves. They may witness loss through death, but they don't yet realize that they will die because they don't yet have enough of a sense of I. So the anxiety seems to be connected to this sense of I, what some people call the ego, which I find a bit of a confusing term, but it's this sense of the I. So as we develop a sense of separateness, so anxiety begins to tremble inside us. But it isn't learned. That's the thing. It's innate. It was there all along. It's even there in the young child. It's simply dormant as a code, biding its time. And this is the dilemma of anxiety, that we cannot prevent it. We can't relax enough, deep enough, to make it go away. It's a part of our constriction. It's cellular. The shadow of constriction is connected to two primary things, to our breathing and to our thinking. And this is why the great meditation traditions train you to follow the breath. Because if you do that for 10 or 20 years or so, then one day, if you're lucky, you will have a breakthrough and realize that you can exist without thought. But only a certain, let's face it, you know, only a certain kind of person is going to do that, to enter on such a path. So what about the rest of us? Is there any hope for us? Well, the first step of all transformation is always the same step. As Gurdjieff put it, first of all, realize you're in prison. Or as Buddha might say, all life is suffering. Another way of saying it. Realize you're in prison. Or some such thing. You know, we're constricted by our mortality, by our biological equipment. We have evolved differently from the animals. They have fear, but they don't have anxiety because they don't have enough self-awareness yet. And yet anxiety is also the very vibration that inspires the quest for higher knowledge. So it's wonderful from that point of view. So we need to get to know it. And the biggest dilemma with anxiety is that we can't think our way out of it. Mental knowledge isn't enough. No amount of psychoanalysis is going to be enough. We have to contact the vibration directly. In the Golden Path, we talk a great deal about the path of contemplation. Well, when you get into it to a certain level, into the heart of your Venus sequence, for example, then you come to a place where you have to contemplate your anxiety. You might not even think of yourself right now as having anxiety, but it's there. And you'll come to it as you go deep enough. We carry this sacred wound as a constriction deep in our being. And once we've stopped trying to run from it, which might take us lifetimes, then we have to begin to turn in towards it. You know, it's not going to kill us. It's there anyway. And the moment we bring our awareness into the body, then strangely enough, it seems to dissipate. And our breath is the key. Now, how many breaths do you think you take each day? You might be surprised. Someone's figured this out. It's on the internet. About 17,000, they reckon. How many of those breaths are you aware of each day? None? Maybe one? Maybe a few? And this is the power of contemplation. It brings pauses into your day. It slows you down. It doesn't necessarily slow down your outer life, but it slows down your deep rhythms. And it brings you into a stately rhythm. It allows more awareness into the day. And that's how we meet anxiety, with awareness. There's nothing wrong with constriction. It's the starting point of our grand journey. The body is a constriction for awareness. And until our awareness one day breaks free from the body and connects into the fundamental patterns of the universe, that's coming. That's one day. And that's the path of acceptance. That's where that's leading. So the 25th gift is the gift of acceptance. A central aspect of contemplation is a coming to terms with your life as it is. And this is simple, but it's not always as easy as it sounds. So I break it down into three phases. I call them allow, accept, and embrace. It's just a practical way of using this. And the 25th gift is all about this process. It's the gift of acceptance. So first we have to allow. And allowing is very spacious. You allow yourself to be a certain way, to feel a certain way. You don't have to accept it yet. You don't have to like it or anything. Allowing is the very first breath of our awareness. It's the very act of turning within, which is why it's the first stage in contemplation. And allowing also has an additional component. It has openness. You're saying, I'm open for the possibility of breakthrough. I'm available. I have no idea what that looks like or what it means even, but I'm suffering and it may not be okay, but at least I'm acknowledging it. I'm allowing it. Allowing is very, very powerful because it begins with the physical. Whatever you're experiencing in life, however hard it is, bring your awareness to your physicality, to the sensations and the discomfort in your body. Let the breath come. Never mind about your feelings or your thoughts. Let them do what they want. We'll deal with them later. You begin with the physical. You just allow your body to feel the way it feels. And there's a kind of odd comfort in the simplicity of that. The body is uncomplicated in that way. And after a while, you'll feel yourself slowing down. You'll feel your breath beginning to deepen. Allowing is just staying with the body. Another powerful way of allowing is to do something physical with the body. You might run, or you might exercise, or you might do something with your hands, a craft or something. All these kinds of things that are rhythmic can help bring your awareness away from the mind and back into the physical cells. And the next layer is called acceptance. And it's the name given to this 25th gift. And acceptance is when you make full contact with your feelings. So once your breath has settled a bit and you've regained some core stability, then you can feel your feelings without being overwhelmed by them. Emotions, you know, are chemical. So once the chemistry is bearable, then we will feel some space opening around our feelings. We may weep, we may feel sad, we may feel numb or angry or afraid. But now at least we're in touch with how we feel. And our awareness can begin to wrap itself around those feelings and be generous around those feelings. Acceptance happens as we remember our heart. Our heart reminds us that everything is okay. Even in the midst of pain, everything is still okay at a deeper level. And this is when we begin to trust again. Because with acceptance, there's always hope. Not blind emotional hope, just the hope of life. Life is hope. Life is optimism. So acceptance allows the possibility that transformation may occur. In fact, the possibility is becoming a probability. Allow, accept, and embrace. It's all the process of acceptance. I'm just breaking down the process behind the word. So embrace is when the third component comes in, the mind. Allow is of the physical body. Accept is of the emotional realm. And embrace is the mental aspect. So as the heart opens to our experience, so the mind finally lets go. Because the mind is the chief problem. When the body's filled with anxiety, then the mind runs amok. It's like the mad kind of factory manager trying to keep all the machines from overheating. In the end, he just gives up. But the embrace is where the magic happens. Embracing pain requires a full and a deep capacity to breathe. And now the breath is falling deeply into your belly. Now you can handle life, no matter how intense your feelings. Now with an open heart, you can ignite your own transformation. It's important here to discriminate between embracing something and resignation. You know, when you resign to something, it's a dropping of your head. It's a yielding to the shadow without the awareness of the city. The gift always straddles both ends of the spectrum. Acceptance lies between constriction and love. Whereas resignation is surrendering to the constriction. Many people make this mistake in their shadow work. They kind of cave in on themselves. And they forget that there's something higher in their nature. There's something higher hidden in the shadow. You see people like this everywhere. They've lost hope. They believe that things can never change. They believe things can never get better. And this is a false kind of acceptance. True acceptance is done with your head held high, with a deep breath of courage, almost with a kind of defiance in a way. You turn to the shadow and you say, yes, yes, I see you, but I don't have to believe in you. You're just the beginning. And without turning from the shadow, you open your heart up to more. You know, one of the hardest things for humans to accept is the beauty of life. We rush headlong past it every day. But without time for pauses, without the right attitude, we never break out of the constricted, addictive mindset. But the contemplated life allows you time for beauty. It allows some of the wildness back into your soul. The world has become so tame. Our technology, for all of its gifts, it's so tame. It's making us docile. You know, some years ago, I lived for a year or so, in Maui, in Hawaii. It's a place of paradise. It's just heaven on earth. There's not even any nasty creatures there. The whole place is just so soft and so yielding. And you can step naked into the forest and you can walk across ripe mangoes. That's the kind of place it is. But when I was there, I went to a few parties and just because you do. And I found all these people taking drugs, like marijuana and ecstasy and doing these things. And I've got nothing against those things at all. But if there's one place you don't need them, it's Maui in Hawaii. So my point is that it's really hard for us to let that beauty of the world in, unless we can also accept the suffering that's inside us. And that means we have to be bold. We have to be inner warriors. We have to breathe and let the beauty in. And yes, as Khalil Gibran says, love will shatter your dreams and lay you waste like the north wind lays waste the garden. But what a way to go. Life and love opens us up to higher and higher vistas, and it smashes our preconceptions. It shakes the mind to its foundations. So I want to give you something practical here. Look at your day through the lens of acceptance. This is an amazing spiritual practice. Look at the things you don't allow to be the way they are. A slow car pulls out in front of you when you're in a hurry. A person that irritates you. A rain shower just at the wrong moment. Whatever it is, just try allowing it. And surround your day in allowing. And then you'll begin to see this process of allow, accept, embrace. You'll have to slow down because you can't do this otherwise. But it means that your day will taste very different to you. And it'll be imbued with a new kind of awareness. The 25th city. Universal love. It's funny what happens when you turn your awareness inwards. When you enter into a period of deep contemplation, for example. Here with the Gene Keys, we contemplate the codes of life inside ourselves. And when we go deep enough, we get to see that our DNA really contains revelations. It connects us to these cities, you know, deep within us. Within the infinitesimal folds of our physicality lies the possibility for our transcendence. We can never be alone. Our DNA prohibits that. It contains the history of our species as a holographic memory. And it also, like a seed, contains the holographic imprint of what we could one day become. And you can access that seed. That memory imprint. It's readily available for those of us who turn within. All my insights come from this place. Our spiritual evolution drives us either to deny or accept the wounds that we carry. There are no other options. It's just a matter of time. You can tread water, you can distract yourself, but eventually it needs to be addressed. The human heart is the most obvious way in. Can we accept life through our heart? Can we learn to contemplate with our heart? The thing about this city is it describes the shift from the personal to the universal. Most of us really only think of love as a personal connection that passes between people or between us and something outside us. And the feeling of love then bridges that distance, bringing us closer in unison to that person or that object. But universal love lies in another dimensional field entirely. It's the connective tissue that holds together everything. And this is why we call it God. It's love. And this isn't just anthropomorphizing. It really does have a quality of unifying. So when we begin to move on the path towards realization, we have to let go of the personal dimension. The personal dimension still retains a certain quality, but you can no longer say that you love someone or something more than anything else. It's a big change. It's a big mystery, this leap from the gift to the city. I'm not sure what it takes. It just seems to happen on its own accord as we go on opening and softening our hearts. It's beautiful, really, because you can only achieve through the feminine approach. You can't will your heart to open that much. Your acceptance and your embracing just becomes pure surrender. You just bow to life. A friend of mine once showed me how the classic position of prayer, on your knees with your hands clasped together, actually is the only position you can remain upright in when you're unconscious. Think about that. It's the same in the Muslim version, except there you collapse completely. So these postures were probably discovered by ecstatics as they surrendered all trace of their ego. And they were just there, held up by gravity, by that posture. And then the postures were copied by others. All that love that's locked away in our DNA, and the DNA is just filtering it through the memory, through the ancestral memory. This city is about the embracing of the collective wound. It's the passage to Christhood or Buddhahood. And we can't get there. We just have to go on opening and accepting, and the path leads us there of its own accord. Even so, it's important to always bear the city in mind. It's your natural state. And it has a certain flavour, has a certain peacefulness to it. Universal love. Unconditional love. It's not the fiery love of the ecstatic. It's not the divine passion. It's after all that's burned away. It's what's left over. It's a deep knowing that emanates from ourselves. A knowing that we're one. And it transcends and it includes personal love. It's the background radiation for all our experiences. Life emerges out of and falls into this love. It's intriguing that this 25th gene key is part of the codon ring called the Ring of Humanity, because at its highest level, the 25th gene key feels rather inhuman, at least inhuman as we know it. This city concerns the future of humanity. It concerns a new kind of human being, a human that knows it's universal. A human that's moved away from the personal dimension. And that's going to make a very different kind of planet. I don't think it's very easy for us to imagine that. And the 25th city is also one of the seven sacred seals. That's a mystical group of gene keys whose collective role is to heal the sacred wound within humanity. And the 25th gene key, the 25th city, is the third seal. And the third seal heals the human wound of shame. You know, Adam and Eve in the garden, covering themselves up. We believe ourselves unworthy at such a deep level. And we've built a civilization based around that. The manifestation of our unworthiness is greed. It's selfishness. We're always trying to fill this void we feel inside. One day when we no longer feel it, and we'll no longer be selfish anymore, we'll have no need of that. We'll follow our higher purpose, and our higher purpose will always be to serve the whole in some way. And our reward will come from service, from philanthropy. And this is why the 25th gene key always has such a strong connection to money. It does. When you contemplate it, you'll see that. You know how constricting money or lack of money can be? Well, this 25th city has plans. It sees a world without money. It sees a world where giving is the only currency. It knows that. It knows that's what's coming. One day, one fine and beautiful day.